In my neighborhood, a couple years ago, a man started on a rather ambitious project. I live in a typical Northwest Austin neighborhood, and underneath the surface of the ground, just a little bit, there are stones. In fact, in this particular guy's yard, he had big field stones that stuck up through, and he had trouble having grass grow, so he started off on the ambitious project of building a stone planter box. This was not any ordinary stone planter box. He was using field stones that were this big out of his yard to build a planter box around a huge tree in the middle of his yard. The planter box was at least 2 or 3 feet tall, and it went all the way around this large tree. And this man spent literally day after day after day slaving away out there in the hot sun to take these stones and make a planter box around there. He mixed up the mortar, and he moved all those stones and built them together and put them all around there. And I used to drive by in the evenings thinking, he's spending every evening out here working to build this planter box. Well, he moved. Sold the house. Company transferred him to another state. And guess what happened over Christmas? The new owner of the home decided he didn't like that planter box around his tree. And what's amazing to me is the relatively swift period of time it took him to remove all of that other man's hard work. I mean, with just in a matter of about a week, there was a huge pile of stones sitting on the front of this guy's property. Hopefully, he's going to haul them away. And I thought to myself, you know, that's a parable on life. So often, we can spend days and weeks and years laboring on a particular project, investing our hard-earned time and energy and resources and money to put something together that in a short period of time, someone else can come behind us and it's gone. Almost no time at all. When we stand at the crossroad of looking back on 1995 and looking ahead to 1996, it's very important that we evaluate our activities and ask and answer the questions. Are the things that we are involved in, that we're giving our lives to, that we're investing ourselves in, are they things that will last or things that will be torn down and thrown away? Every year, our elders give quite a bit of time at the end of one year and start of a new year evaluating goals and priorities and objectives for the church. In fact, this year I asked the elders to join me in committing to a time of prayer and fasting. And from New Year's Day in the evening until Friday morning, just past Friday, the elders and the staff and their wives spent time fasting and praying before God, asking God to give us a humble heart and show us where we need to grow to move forward in our spiritual lives over the course of the year. So if you talk to anybody in the office that was grumpy over the past week, please forgive them. Or one of the elders that wasn't as responsive, they were fasting during this last week. And as I thought about our message for this morning on this dedication day, when we're going to dedicate the year to God, I kept asking God, God, tell me what I ought to speak on. And you know what he told me to speak on? Giving of all things. Now you might say, well, Tim, the church needs money, right? People speak on giving when the church needs money. That's not true. In fact, let me prove it to you. Exhibit A, we've already taken the offering. Exhibit B, your bulletin. Pull out your bulletin and look at the back panel. The giving statistics for 1995 are listed there, and you'll notice in the 1995 column that our budgeted receipts, that's the money that we thought it would take to make budget this year, was $754,811. Actually, we spent less than our budget. What we took in last year was $773,707. So we took in almost $20,000 more than what we budgeted for and over what we needed. I'll bet you wish that happened at your house. Look down at another column that I believe is equally phenomenal. In our land and building fund, from 1993 to 1995, that's a three-year period, we had pledged $911,400 in pledges that people promised to give toward the building fund. In those 3 years, we have collected $866,875, 95% of what was pledged. Now, here's what the lending institution told us. All the banks and people we talked to said you can never count on taking in more than 80% of what is pledged. People move away. People die. People have bad years financially. You just can't count on taking in more than 80%. Well, Hill Country Bible Church beat that by 15%. We took in over 95% of what was pledged. Praise be to God. And thank you for your faithfulness to support this ministry. That's not why I'm talking about giving this morning. Let me tell you why I am talking about giving. Turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus speaks in three verses some very, very important words that we need to hear and embrace personally in order to move forward in our spiritual development and growth. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19, 20, and 21. Do you realize that of the 38 parables that Jesus spoke, 16 of them had to do with money? In the New Testament, there are 500 verses on prayer, fewer than 500 verses on faith, and over 2,000 verses on money. Why is that? Jesus tells us, verse 19 of chapter 6, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." What does the thermometer, the yardstick, and the dollar bill, what do they have in common? Well, the yardstick measures distance. The thermometer measures temperature. And the dollar bill measures your heart. Jesus says, if you want to find your heart, not what your mind says about your commitments. What your mind says about your commitments is irrelevant. What your heart is really all about, where your real affection lies, if you really truly want to find out what you're about and what you love, Jesus says, find where your treasure is stockpiled and dig out under there, and there you'll find your heart. Find where your treasure is, and there you'll find your heart. What is it that you treasure? Where do your resources flow to? What gets the majority of your money? Whatever that is, whether it's your 401k, whether it's your children's retirement account, whether it's your home, whether it's your automobile, whether it's your wardrobe, whatever that might be, wherever your money is going, that's where your heart is located. And Jesus knows that our heart is a crucial issue in our spiritual development. And so he tells us to watch where our resources flow, and that's where we'll find what really is important to us, what our true commitments are all about. Let's look at how he says it in this verse. Verse 19, first of all, he points out that we have a treasuring instinct. He says, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth." Now, the idea of storing up, he's telling us to stop doing that. And the phrase literally store up is the phrase treasure. In other words, what he's saying is do not treasure a pile or a stockpile of treasure. And don't lay that up for yourself here on earth. There's nothing wrong with making money, and there's nothing wrong with having lots of money. The problem is when we begin to hoard or stockpile money or invest it in resources that have temporary value, to the point where that becomes a focus in our lives. And Jesus says, stop doing that. Now, why would he tell us to stop doing that? Because we do that by nature. We are treasurers. We have a propensity to find something of value and try to get it and hang on to it. Earl Palmer, in his book, The Enormous Exception, says it this way. Listen carefully to his words. I think he has beautiful insight into this passage. He says, Jesus recognizes that as human beings, we are treasurers who seek out that which we may honor and highly prize. We notice that Jesus does not reject this treasuring instinct, which begins very early in our lives and continues through our life journey. Our problem with treasuring begins when we become confused and the instinct is exploited by selfishness and the temptation to idolatry, so that we treasure the temporary wasting assets and attach more importance to certain treasures than they deserve. The result of such confusion is that we cease to enjoy and steward the bountiful treasures of God's creation for what they really are. They are temporary and good gifts presented to us throughout the journey of our lives. This is the confusion of idolatry. It is idolatry that seeks to freeze and possess the temporary good gifts of creation as if they could be permanent markers and proofs of our worth. We give our hearts to them and search for enduring worth, and in return, they can give us only what they really are. That is a wasting treasure. But even that is now destroyed because it has been misused and misunderstood. In the end, we lose our affection and our hope in the disappointment of the treasure that fades away in front of our eyes like a desert mirage. It happened because our affection and hope had been misplaced in the first place. What Palmer's saying is we've got this desire to find something in life that's valuable. And we tend to turn around and get short-sighted. We look at the stuff that's out there and we think, that's it. And if I can just get it and hold it, if I can have the right amount of it and hang on to it, if I can just do that, then I'll be satisfied. Only when we get it, it deteriorates. It loses its value. It becomes something that we don't really care that much for anymore. And we become disappointed and disillusioned. The purpose for that treasuring instinct is that we would find that which is really important, that we would treasure the ultimate prize, the prize of a relationship with God. And so he says, don't store up for yourself treasures on earth. Notice there are two vaults here. You can store them up for yourself on earth, and if you do that, you're going to find that moths destroy. They eat through valuable garments. That rust destroys. It ruins the metal that makes up much of what we have. Eventually it deteriorates, and thieves break in and steal. The gold, the jewels, or whatever valuables, they can be lost to thieves who break in. You say, but I've got insurance. How much do you pay for that insurance? You know, even the very peace of mind that your stuff will endure, that fine, shiny new car will make it. You have to pay for that peace of mind. You see, it's all coming down to cost. Jesus says, on the other hand, store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. There's a vault in heaven. There's a place where you can store your treasures, where you can have eternal rewards, where you can gain the benefit of the satisfaction today that you're serving God and have rewards in heaven. And we see that there's a guaranteed return by our stewardship. And I want you to look at one other passage of Scripture for us to understand this completely. Turn to Luke chapter 12. In Luke chapter 12, we're going to see a contrast between the way one man chooses to live his life and the result, and the way Jesus suggests that we ought to live our lives and the result of that. One man is bound by his possessions. The other is free to live and to give and to enjoy the bounty of God's goodness. In verse 15, Jesus said to them, "Watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." You know, there's more than one kind of greed. There's more than one kind of greed. You know, most Americans today say that we are a materialistic culture. In fact, the University of Princeton did a study and found that up in the 90% of Americans that are surveyed would say, yeah, we're too materialistic. But when it comes to asking people on an individual level, are you materialistic? Everybody points the finger at the other guy. Now, how is it that we as a culture are all materialistic, but it's always the other guy? It's the guy that has a little bit more than us is the one that's materialistic. Jesus said there are all kinds of greed. And if you're greedy, you may have a little tiny bit and be greedy. Or you may have a lot and be greedy. It's dangerous. And here's what happens. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Life is bigger than your stuff. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. He had such a good year. He didn't know what to do with all of his resources. That sounds like great, doesn't it? 1996, wouldn't it be great to have that kind of a year? What would you do if you had it? Here's the problem. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God." Now, many people have interpreted this passage that God took his life in judgment for him saying, "I'm going to take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry." That's not why God took his life. In fact, what God is doing is showing him, in taking his life, he's showing this man that you can have everything in the world stored up. You can have a retirement plan that's perfectly secure. Your 401k can be Fort Knox. And it's not going to amount to anything when God says that's the end of your life. So if the end of your life cannot be controlled by the things you possess, how much of life is really measured in stuff? How much of it's really measured in stuff? And the pursuit of stuff, and the hoarding of stuff, and the preservation of life by stuff. You see, life's bigger than what you have, and it always will be. Here's the contrast. Look at what Jesus says in verse 22. Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens, they do not sow or reap. They have no storehouse or barn, yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you are than birds! Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you?" And here's the issue. Oh, you of little faith. You say, "God, if I give it away, if I invest in eternity, if I don't stockpile it and save it, what will happen to me?" What kind of issue is that? That's a faith issue. Do you really trust God with your life? And you see, that's why giving is important. Because in the act of giving, when you give, you are saying, "God, I better have you. God, I'm giving this. I'm going to need you. God, you're going to have to provide for me tomorrow. I can't take care of myself." And in the act of giving, not only are we giving away some of the resources that God has given to us, but we're creating a dependency on Him. And we're stretching and growing in our faith. That's why giving is so important. Read with me further. Verse 29, "And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek His kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well." God says, "I will provide food, clothing, and shelter for my people if you're seeking my kingdom. I will take care of your needs." Jesus did not pray, "And give us this day our children's college fund." He prayed, "And give us this day our daily bread." In other words, if I have enough for today, God has met my needs for today. Does that mean there's anything wrong with having the children's college fund? No, it doesn't. But does that take priority over giving to God? What does take priority over giving to God? Because where your treasure's stockpiled, that's where your heart will be also. Verse 32, look at the freedom here. He says, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." You've got the kingdom already. What more could you ever want? In light of that, he says, "Sell your possessions and give to the poor." Be radical in your willingness to release the resources that God has given you. Give it away. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide for yourself purses that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near or no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The life of freedom is a life of faith, which says, "I don't have to worry about taking care of every detail of the future. When God calls on me, I am free with my resources to share with those in need. Because in doing that, I'm creating the reality that I believe I'm a citizen of the kingdom, that my future is secure in Him." and that I have confidence that God's working in my life, and my heart is not tied up by my stuff. If our heart is tied up in a stockpile of perishing returns here on earth, we are wasting precious heart, of which we cannot afford to lose. Notice the last phrase. He says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You'd think it'd be the other way around, wouldn't you? You'd think he'd be saying, where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. But most of us are self-deceivers. I know I'm that way. I have a tendency to think that what I think in my mind is probably the reality of the world around me, when what I do in my actions may be different. So what Jesus does is he goes to the action. He says, look at what you're doing. Look at what you're doing with your resources, because once you understand what you're doing with your resources, then you will be able to work backwards and find out what's really going on inside. You'll be able to work backwards to the heart. And Jesus Christ wants our heart. He wants our heart. Well, I really was curious to see how we were doing as a church. And so I had our administrator, Doug, put together some numbers for me, and I want to share those with you this morning because it was fascinating to me, and I think you'd want to know. We have 563 family units at Hill Country Bible Church, people that identify with this church in some way. And we called the Austin Chamber of Commerce, and we checked around all the zip codes in our area to find out what the average income was in our area. You know what the average income in our area is? Now, this is average. Some make a lot more, some make a lot less. But the per household income in our area is $42,000. Now, if you take those families that are part of our church and take that income that each of us make that we bring into our home, and you look at those, you can get a kind of an indication of how we're doing as a church. If everybody at Hill Country Bible Church gave 10% to the church, and now I know a lot of people are giving money to other ministries, and that's okay, but if everybody gave 10% to the church, our budget for last year would have been $2.3 million. You say, well, how much did we give collectively? We gave 3.2% of our income to Hill Country Bible Church. As a church, we gave, on the average, per family associates with the church, 3.2% of our income. I don't know how God feels about that. It's an individual decision. I have no idea what people give. That's part of my charge. It's up to you. But I would ask you the question, going into 1997 or 1996, am I satisfied that my heart is truly reflected in my giving? That I am truly demonstrating a heart that's committed to the ministry of God? Am I laying up for myself treasures in heaven? It's so easy. It is so easy for the heart to fall in love with the wrong kinds of things. And I fear that many of our problems stem from a basic heart attitude. And we can begin to correct that by saying, God, I am going to give to you. And in the process of giving to you, I'm going to be investing in eternity, which will require more faith, which will require more commitment, which will require more diligence on my part, which in essence will demonstrate and move and magnify my commitment to you, God. And in the process, God will honor you. In the process, God will change you. This sermon about giving is not to boost the coffers. It's to change our hearts. At this time, we want to do what we do each year at Hill Country Bible Church, and that is to have a time of prayer where we dedicate our church to God for the year. We're going to have the elders, former and present, come forward and kneel at the altar, and we're going to pray for 1996, and we're going to ask God to take our church in 1996 and use it the way He wants to. Then after that, we're going to have an opportunity for you as well to dedicate your hearts, your home, your life to God in 1996. Give this year to Him. And we really encourage you, don't just pass the next few minutes letting this time go, but really spend some time giving this year to God. Some of you may want to come to the front and join the elders here and kneel and pray and give this year to God. If you feel led to do that, great. If you don't feel led to do that, you're welcome to do that right in your seat. But now's the time. Today's the day. Let's give this year to God. Elders, would you join me at the front?